You are listening to Blessed and Bossed Up, presented by Anchored Media, an entrepreneurship podcast for Christians all about how to make God the CEO of your business. Get ready to be inspired, challenged, but well-equipped to live and build your destiny His way. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Blessed and Bossed Up podcast. We are continuing on with our book club pick, The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. Today's episode, we are going to finish the last chapter in part two of the book. The book is three parts. And then the author has like this intermission text where it's not like a full chapter, but it just sets the tone for part three. So we're going to cover this last chapter in part two, the intermission, and then we'll pick up next week with getting started on part three. If you do not have this book, click the link in the show notes. It's called The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry by John Mark Comer. I believe that this book is very timely for all of us who are busy, who wear many hats, but we want to make sure that we are living a life that is approving to the Lord, and that looks like living a lifestyle that models after Jesus, or that's Jesus' apprentice, as he says in his book. So in the last episode, we talked about how, or in the last chapter that we reviewed, the author discussed how Jesus says that his yoke is easy and his burden is light. And the author let us know that that light burden, that easy yoke, is us taking on a lifestyle of Jesus. And so in this chapter, he starts it off by talking about the rule of life. He says, if there's anything that you pick up from reading the four Gospels, is that Jesus was rarely in a hurry. He comically points out, can you imagine a stressed out Jesus snapping at Mary Magdalene after a long day? I can't believe you dropped the hummus, sighing and saying to himself, I seriously need a glass of wine. Can you picture him half talking to you, half texting on his phone, the sporadic, punctuating a one-sided conversation? Can you hear him saying, I'm sorry, I love to heal your leg, but I have a plane to catch. I'm speaking at a TEDx in Jerusalem tomorrow. Here's Thaddeus, an apprentice of mine nobody's ever heard of. He's happy to pray for you. I'm out. Or talk to my assistant, Judas. We'll see if he can squeeze you in. Or what magazine are you with? And you say none, and his eyes glaze over. No. But there's one story where Jesus' friend Lazarus was sick. By friend, I mean close friend. And by sick, I mean about to die sick. But when Jesus got the life or death message, we read this odd line where he says, when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was two more days. And then he said to his disciples, let us go back to Judea. Not exactly in a hurry, was he? And his friend's life hung in the balance. In another story, Jesus was teaching in a synagogue when this guy Jairus literally fell at Jesus' feet, begging him to come and heal his little girl who was at the point of death. Again, life or death. But on the way to Jairus' home, a woman with a chronic health condition, which is, of course, the woman with the issue of blood that went back 12 years, interrupted Jesus. There's a beautiful story where Jesus took all the time in the world with her. No rush at all. Can you imagine how Jairus must have felt? I imagine him tapping his foot, giving Jesus the come on look, chest tight with anxiety. But in the end, Jesus did make it to Jairus' daughter and healed her as well. But every time I read that story, I'm struck by how fiercely present Jesus was, how he just would not let anything or anyone, even a medical emergency or a hurting father, rush him into the next moment. And this story isn't a one-off. It isn't an outlier or an enigma. Jesus was constantly interrupted. Read the gospel. Half the stories are interruptions. Yet he never comes off as agitated or annoyed. Jesus' schedule was full, to the brim at times, in a good way. Yet he never came off as hurried. You know what Jesus is an amazing example of in this context? A regulated central nervous system. We see a lot of talk online, especially now that mental health is a huge, rightfully so, topic of conversation. We see a lot of Black women in particular, or anybody of marginalized communities, looking to achieve this space of peace, looking to achieve this space of a regulated central nervous system, because we recognize that trauma, achieving, striving, hurry, anxiety, stress. All of these things have contributed to long-term issues such as health problems, autoimmune diseases, high blood pressure, diabetes, all of these complications that we are recognizing are things that we don't want to be a part of our life. So we're looking for these solutions. And so we see these conversations about individuals who are looking to achieve this regulated central nervous system. And we see all this content and these articles and things about how folks are looking to regulate their central nervous system. And I love how the answer is always found exactly where it needs to be, and that is in Jesus Christ. What the author has described here and the examples that he used of Jesus not being rushed or hurried, even in the midst of all of this, in all of his interruptions, is a perfect example of a regulated central nervous system. To define it for those who may not know, a regulated central nervous system means that your brain and your body can adaptively respond to stress and then return to a calm and balanced state. It's less about never feeling stress and more about how efficiently you recover and maintain control. What it looks like is you can feel stress, anxiety, or pressure without becoming overwhelmed. Your body can shift out of fight, flight, or freeze mode and get back to a calm. Your emotions are proportionate to the situations that you may be dealing with. You can think clearly under pressure, and you can recover from triggers relatively quickly instead of staying stuck and going down a rabbit hole and all of these things. When your nervous system is dysregulated, you'll experience things such as chronic anxiety, irritability, overwhelm, emotional numbness or shutdown, trouble focusing or making decisions, sleep issues, fatigue or burnout, and some may also experience physical symptoms such as gut issues, a tight chest, headaches. Various mental health and stress data say that about 70 to 80% of adults report experiencing frequent stress. Around 1 in 5 U.S. adults experience a diagnosable mental health condition each year. Chronic stress is considered a public health issue by organizations such as the American Psychological Association, or the APA. Workplace burnout rates often exceed 50% in some professions. So overall, a large portion of people are functioning with some level of nervous system dysregulation, even if they appear to be high functioning. So why am I sharing with you this data? Here is what I want you to understand first, that what this book is discussing, the life that the Lord is inviting us into, is not just spiritual. This has direct consequences and influence on our day-to-day lives and in the way in which our body operates. Something else I want to point out, because I started off with what it looks like when your nervous system is regulated. And let me repeat in case you missed it. When your nervous system is regulated, you feel stress and anxiety without being overwhelmed. Your body shifts out of fight, flight, or freeze back to calm. Your emotions are proportionate to the situation. You think clearly under pressure, and you recover from triggers relatively quickly. Here's what I want to emphasize here. This standard of what a regulated nervous system look like is still subpar to Jesus' response. Hear me out. This says that you can feel stress without being overwhelmed. Jesus wasn't stressed at all. This says that your emotions are proportionate to the situation. Jesus' emotions were independent of the situation altogether. This says you can think clearly under pressure. Jesus had perfect peace. This says you can recover from triggers relatively quickly. Jesus was never triggered at all because he was anchored in the truth. To me, this is a perfect personification of my ways are not your ways. My thoughts are not your thoughts. This is a perfect example of the ways of Jesus surpassing even what is the goal to us as human beings in our flesh. I don't know about y'all, But that correlation was good to me because it just shows how so many of us are looking for these earthly remedies when the answer, Him, will allow us to operate from a state that surpasses what even scientists and professionals say the ideal outcome is. I don't want just a regulated central nervous system. I want to be like Jesus because that's better. And that's what the author wants to get us to a point to where we are living the lifestyle of Jesus. And that is the benefit that we have. The Lord invited us. He said, follow me. And we have to accept that invitation. And not just accept it in words, but in deeds. So the author goes on to say, think with me about Jesus' lifestyle for a few minutes. Jesus made sure to inject a healthy dose of margin into his life. It's been said that margin is the space between your load and your limits. For many of us, there is no space between our load and our limits. We're not at 80% with room to breathe. We're at 100 all the time. Jesus' weekly schedule was a prophetic act against the hurried rhythms of our world. He would regularly get up early and go off to a quiet place to be with his Father. There's a story where the disciples woke up and he was gone, left before dawn just to be alone and greet the day in the quiet. Sometimes he would go away overnight or even for a few weeks at a time just to get away from the crowds and gather himself to God. More than once, we read stories about Jesus sleeping in and the disciples having to wake him up. I like this Jesus and I want to follow him. Same. I like this Jesus. Okay. And I want to follow him too. He says every chance he got, he would enjoy a nice long meal with friends over a bottle of wine, creating space for in-depth conversations about the highs and lows of life. He would practice Sabbath on a weekly basis, an entire day set aside for nothing but rest and worship every single week. The author says we could go on, but my point is simple. He put on display an unhurried life, where space for God and love for people were the top priorities. And because he said yes to the Father and his kingdom, he constantly said no to countless other invitations. He says again, what does it mean to follow Jesus? It's very simple. It means you live the way that Jesus lived. You take his life and his teachings as your template, your model, your pattern. How would Jesus live if he were me? Y'all remember those bracelets from back in the day, the WWJD, what would Jesus do bracelets? We need those back. Cuter, but we need those back. This episode is brought to you by IXL. The final stretch of the school year is here. With projects, report cards, end of the year milestones approaching, IXL helps kids stay focused, confident, and ready to finish strong. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning, whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts. From pre-K through 12th grade, with personalized interactive content that adapts to each child's level and pace, it's an easy way to support learning now, through summer, and into next school year. Y'all know, we've said it month after month, I am an IXL girl. We use it every single day in my house. Right now, my kindergartner is getting ready for a new standardized test, and their testing software that his school used actually integrates with IXL. And so he's able to use IXL for his specific level to get him ready for his upcoming exams. IXL is proven to improve grades. Studies show that kids who use IXL score higher on tests, and that's actually proven in all 50 states. It saves you time and money. One subscription covers everything, pre-K through 12th grade for all the kids in your home. Make an impact on your child's learning and get IXL now. And Blessed and Bossed Up listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/today. Visit IXL.com/today to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price. This episode is brought to you by Built. Now, whether you're renting or paying a mortgage, one of your biggest monthly expenses should be working harder for you. That's where Built comes in. Built is a membership for where you live that rewards you with points on every housing payment, wherever you live. Built started out rewarding members on their rent. Now, as of 2026, Bilt members can also earn points on mortgage payments wherever they live. Every housing payment earns you points that you can use towards flights with top travel partners like United and Hyatt, Lyft rides, Amazon.com purchases, and so much more. Personally, I'm redeeming my points for some trips. It's summertime. It's warm outside. She's trying to be outside. She's trying to be on these flights, okay? But here's what I think is the most underrated part. Bilt members also get access to a neighborhood concierge, meaning it can make restaurant reservations, book fitness classes, and find new local spots, all while being rewarded at more than 45,000 merchant partners. It's like having a personal assistant baked into where you live. It's simple. Being a renter and now owning a home is better with Bilt. Join a membership for where you live at joinbilt.com/blessed. That's joinbilt.com/blessed. Make sure you use our URL so they know that we sent you. He says, I think for many of us, he, as in Jesus, would slow way down. I loved how the author talked about how many of us don't have much margin in our life. I realized this for myself a few years ago when I was in therapy and I was just sharing all of my frustrations with my therapist. And she told me the same thing of, I don't have much margin or room for things to go on. And she explained it to where, and I can't remember the clinical term, but my schedule and everything on my plate was so to the max. One interruption would blow it all up. For example, if my kid would get sick, and now they can't go to school, that throws everything off. Something that is expected, something that happens often, something that should not be a big deal, now totally crushed everything that I had going on because there was no room. And I had realized that in the pursuit of efficiency, I had created this schedule and this lifestyle that had no margin. Because I'm trying to make sure that every hour of the day is accounted for and everything makes sense and I'm prioritizing. And those of us who are type A, we love a plan. We love a schedule. We love a calendar. But if we are not intentional about making sure that there's margin there, we shoot ourselves in the foot. And so something that I started doing since then was to make sure that my margin was accounted for. Part of the way that I could do that was pre-plan for things that could go wrong that are likely to happen. So, for example, when you have children, they're likely to get sick because school germs kids. So having a plan in place to where, okay, if a kid gets sick, here's how I'm going to adjust. A friend of mine and I call it a contingency plan. To where if something happened, the regular degulars of life, then this is the plan that I default to. Having a contingency plan is so helpful because when something goes wrong, your whole schedule and obligations are not disrupted. You just adjust. And already having that plan in place makes things way less stressful. So now when I'm creating my schedule, I'm making sure that I account for those margins. So for me right now, being in school, I know I have a certain amount of absences. So with law school, there are these strict attendance policies that the American Bar Association requires you to attend a certain percentage of classes. I think it's like 80 something percent. So that means I can only afford to miss about maybe 3 or 4 of my classes throughout a semester without pretty much being withdrawn from the course. And so that's a part of my contingency plan. To where should something happen, I'm going to pull from these absences, not go to class, and be able to take care of whatever needs to be taken care of. I have backup childcare. So right now I'm preparing for finals. I need way more time than I have to study for finals. My husband already takes on a lot of extra responsibilities to account for me being in school. So I know I didn't want to put too much on him. So I start making a plan. I have one of my son's classmate's mom does like drop-in care on the weekends for families and things. So I had that. I'm like, perfect. If I need childcare on the weekends so that I could study, I'm going to do this. It's somebody I know, somebody I trust, somebody my kids are familiar with. So it's a no-brainer. So today, I'm recording this right now. It's Sunday around noon. I'm dropping the kids off for a good 4-hour block so that I could focus and study for my finals coming up. So instead of being stressed and not sleeping and staying up all night and waking up super early to try to accommodate for studying, so then I'm fatigued, I'm not resting, I'm not eating right, and my brain isn't even functioning enough to study effectively anyway, instead of trying to upend everything to make everything fit, I have backup plans to be able to make sure everything is accounted for. Kids are happy, husband isn't taking on anymore, and I'm able to focus at a time where I'm awake and I am able to be productive. So just having these things in place for us as busy women who wear multiple hats is important. So as you're making your plans for this week and accounting for all the things you have to do, make sure that you add some margin in there as well. It could be as simple as I protect the first 2 hours of my day so that I can have a slow morning. This is something I do when it's warm out. I live in a DC area, so when it's cold, it's freezing in the morning. But now the weather is changing to where it's 65 degrees at 7 a.m. I could work with that. I can't work with the 20s, okay, or the 30s, or even the 50s for that matter. But when it's 65 degrees first thing in the morning, this is perfect. I can have a quiet morning where I wake up, I make my coffee or tea, I sit in my backyard, listen to the birds chirp, watch the squirrels run on the fence, smell the fresh air, talk to the Lord, and slowly make my way into what awaits me for that day. That's working in a margin. Or it could be a non-negotiable where things shut down at 7, 8 o'clock. And so that evening time is just time for you to relax, put your feet up, decompress from the day, wind down before going to bed, not just hopping into bed and going to sleep, but just winding down, relaxing and decompressing for the day. That's adding in margin. And then if things happen, you have these pockets of time where, okay, I usually shut down at 8, but the kids were home today, so I need another hour. So I might wake up an hour earlier so that I could start my morning, slow morning earlier, so that I could fit in an extra hour of work or whatever needs to get done. Or I'm going to put the kids to bed a little bit earlier tonight so that I could get that extra hour to catch up on some things in the evening before I decompress. But whatever the case is, make sure that you have room for margin and you're seriously taking that into consideration when you're planning so that you don't do away with it. Because I know I'm guilty when I have a lot going on to where anything that might have been for me on the calendar, it gets tossed. And we can't do that. That's not how Jesus lived, and that's not how we're going to live either. Along those same lines of scheduling, the author says, over the last few years, there's been an explosion of chatter in the self-help world over this idea of a fixed hour schedule. Basically, you write up an ideal day or week or month on a blank calendar. You start with all your top priorities. The spiritual disciplines go first if you're a follower of Christ, then sleep, exercise, work, play, reading, margin, etc. And within reason, you stick to it. But most people don't realize this idea started not in the marketplace, but in the monastery. Not a decade ago, but over a millennium ago, where monastic orders and often entire communities chose to do life together around a rule of life. A rule was a schedule and set of practices to order your life around the ways of Jesus and community. It was a way to keep from getting sucked into the hurry, the busyness, the noise, and the distraction of regular life. A way to slow down, a way to live into what really matters, what Jesus called abiding, key relationships with family and community, the work God has set before us, a healthy soul, you know, the good stuff. He then discusses a trellis, and he says, think of Jesus's teaching on abiding in the vine from John 15, one of his most important teachings on emotional health and spiritual life. Now think of a pleasant wine tasting memory. What's underneath every thriving vine? A trellis, a structure to hold up the vine so that it can grow and bear fruit. If you're listening to this, wherever you're listening to this, pause and I want you to go and Google trellis. It's spelled T-R-E-L-L-I-S. If you don't know what it is, I just want you to get a visual so that what he's saying can fully click for you. He says, what a trellis is to a vine, a rule of life is to abiding. It is a structure, in this case, a schedule and a set of practices to set up abiding as the central pursuit of your life. It is a way to organize all of your life around the practice and the presence of God, to work and rest and play and eat and drink and hang out with your friends and run errands and catch up on the news, all out of a place of deep, loving enjoyment of the Father's company. If a vine doesn't have a trellis, it will die. And if your life with Jesus doesn't have some kind of structure to facilitate health and growth, it will wither away. Following Jesus has to make it into your schedule and into your practices, or it will simply never happen. Apprenticeship to Jesus will remain an idea, not a reality in your life. But here's the rub. Most of us are too busy to follow Jesus. Anytime I teach on a rule of life and some of the core practices for life of Jesus, I hear the same refrain. That sounds good, but I just don't have the time. I'm in grad school. I'm working a demanded job. I have little kids. I'm training for a marathon. I'm not an introvert like you. Honestly, excuses. And I get it. I live in the same world. They're good excuses. I used to smile and nod and let the awkward moment pass, but the older I get, the more I feel the courage to push back a little. Sometimes I graciously ask, are you really? How much time do you spend watching TV? How much time do you spend online or on social media? Shopping. I'll suggest people keep a time log for a week. And when they do, they're usually shocked at how much time they give to trivial things. I would challenge all of us to go in our phones to that weekly report and see where we're spending our time on our devices to get an idea of how much time we actually do have. He says many of us have more than enough time to work with, even in the busy season of life. We just have to reallocate our time to seek first the kingdom of God, not the kingdom of entertainment. I'm going to repeat that part. Seek first the kingdom of God, not the kingdom of entertainment. I love this visual of the trellis and how he's talking about the structure that upholds the vine. Right now, there is a lot of online conversation around immigreed. I really like immigreed. I'm an avid Shark Tank watcher. I've been watching it since season one. And I found out about her from recent seasons of Shark Tank, where she's one of the sharks. And so she is a successful entrepreneur who co-founded Skims with Kim Kardashian, Good American with Khloe Kardashian, and other businesses. And so she's a wildly successful woman from the UK. She's a mom, she's a wife, her husband is equally as successful. And overall, from what I've seen of her, I find her to be inspiring. Lately, she's been doing a lot of interviews and podcasts and things of that nature discussing her book. She recently wrote a book. I don't remember the title of it, and I haven't read it. I don't plan to read it for no other reason of I tell you guys often how I have to tame my inner hustler. And I talked to you in previous episodes about the season that I'm in and just the space I am as far as how my ambition looks. I know for a fact if I read her book, that will awaken my inner hustler and has me operating outside of the will and the timing of the Lord for my life right now. So I'm choosing not to pay attention to it. But I have seen the different conversations circulating around her messages, and I've seen clips and things of that nature. Again, I'm staying away from the long form to protect myself and make sure that I'm on the straight and narrow. Now, from the clips that I've seen, again, caveat, I've not seen the long form of anything, just clips. Some things I agree with, some things I don't. But the reason why I bring it up is because when you hear people's different perspective, whether it's hers or the people who are commenting, you can always tell what is the central focus of people's life. If your central focus is motherhood, everything is going to revolve around motherhood, your career, your aspirations, your self-care, your relationships. It's all going to revolve around motherhood. If your central core is achievement, career, success, whatever that looks like to you, everything is going to revolve with success at the center. Your motherhood, if you're married, your marriage, your friendships, your self-care, all of it is going to be so that career or success can be central. Your priority is like your son, and everything else is the planets that revolves around it. And as Christians, the son, S-O-N, and I think I said this in the last episode, has to be the S-U-N as well. And what I mean by that is Jesus has to be central and everything else revolves around him. And that's why this trellis is so important, because it is the structure that holds up that priority. The reality of being in America is that our capitalistic society makes work our central, and everything we do revolves around work. The weekends, we get 2 days out of the week for ourselves, and then you go right back to work. Your kids go to school so they can learn how to work, and then they also go to school so that you can have somewhere to send them while you go to work. Everything is revolved around vocation. Again, as Christians, we have to be intentional. That's why that trellis is so important. We have to make sure that we have the structure that supports our true priority, which is Jesus. So that work revolves around Jesus. Our parenthood revolves around Jesus. Our marriage revolves around Jesus. Our goals revolve around Jesus. Our self-care revolves around Jesus. Everything revolves around him. And we have to create the structures that support that. We have to protect the structures that support that. And we have to be unapologetic about supporting that. And if we structure our lives in that way, I believe that we will tap into a freedom and a peace that surpasses all understanding, that we will truly be able to not just intellectualize that his yoke is easy and his burden is light, but we'll be able to experience it. And as a result, our lives will be more fulfilling. We will have more joy. Our bodies will be healthier. Our mind will be clear. Our families will be happier. Our children will thrive. All of our problems will be solved because he is the solution. That's not to say things won't be difficult, things won't be hard, that problems won't exist. I'm not saying things will be perfect and all sunshine and rainbows. What I am saying is that we will have a life of safety, of comfort, of peace, of protection, because we have centralized him and created the structure around our life that exalts him the way that it should be. The author says, a life that we have been waiting for, that we ache for, it can be found only by moving through the world shoulder to shoulder with Jesus. He says, so I guess we have come to a crossroads, a get on or get off moment. Are you ready to construct a trellis for your vine, a schedule, a practice or two to create space for life with Jesus, to make room for love and joy and peace to become your default settings? Are you ready to arrange or rearrange your day so that Jesus' life becomes your new normal? And that is where he will then transition us into part three of the book, where he talks about those specific practices for us to live this out. Now, before we get to part three, which will be in the next episode, I told you he has like this intermission where it says, wait, what are the spiritual disciplines again? He says, before we move on to part three, in which I lay out the four core practices that I find the most helpful in slowing down to experience a health and life with Jesus, let me offer a brief summary of what the practices of Jesus are. He talks about how the four gospels are the biographies, and how when we read biographies in any other context, whether it's some of the biographies I love that I've read recently are the Ketanji Brown Jackson biography. I've read Viola Davis's biography. I read and disliked, if I might add, Will Smith's biography recently. He talked about how we read these biographies because these people have achieved these huge levels of success. And so we're reading to see what was their life like? What was their upbringing? What are the things that they did? What were some of their habits and their behaviors that shaped and made up this magnificent level of success? And then how do I emulate some of these same patterns and behaviors and decisions and mindsets so that I can then apply it to my life and achieve similar levels of success? And so he says that we should treat the four gospels as biographies of Jesus, and how we need to apply the same reasonings that we read the biographies of successful people that we've heard of. We should apply those same things to us reading the gospels. And he differentiated them a bit, where he says Matthew and John have the most teaching content per capita. Luke is in the middle, and then Mark has almost none, but the bulk of all four biographies is stories. And so if you are looking to study the life of Jesus, where you're hearing these episodes and you're like, I want to embody this lifestyle, don't just listen to the podcast. Don't just read The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry to get John Mark Comer's words, but go to Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John and read the biography of Jesus for yourself, the same way that you will approach it if you were reading Barack or Michelle Obama's biographies, or Steve Jobs' biography, or Mark Zuckerberg, or Jeff Bezos, or Emma Greed, or any other person that you deem inspirational and worthy to be studied. Take that same approach when reading the Gospels as well. The author then goes back to the trellis metaphor. He says, the point of a trellis isn't to make the vine stand up straight in neat rows, but rather to attain a rich, deep glass of wine. It is to create space for the vine to grow and bear fruit. And unlike other types of habits, the practices of Jesus, which he's saying that you will learn as you read the Gospels, the practices of Jesus aren't just exercises for your mind and your body to grow their willpower muscle and cultivate character. They are far more. They are how we open our minds and bodies to a power far beyond our own and affect change. He says, think about it. What is a discipline? Not a spiritual discipline, just a discipline in general. There's a pretty standard definition that says a discipline is any activity I can do by direct effort that will eventually enable me to do that which currently I cannot do by direct effort. For example, for athletes, let's say you want to bench press your own weight, but you can't. You don't have the power, the muscle to do that. It's not that you can't do it. Any healthy person can. It's just that you can't do it yet. You just need access to more power. And so to that end, you need to work out. So a discipline is, say, a morning push-up routine or something that you can do. You start with 5, then 10, and you work your way up to 50. Eventually, through discipline, you become the kind of person who can do something you previously could not do. A discipline is a way to access power. And so he's saying that by you reading the Gospels, you will learn disciplines. And then you will also learn spiritual discipline. He said a spiritual discipline is similar but different. It's similar in that it's any activity I can do by direct effort that will eventually enable me to do that which currently I cannot do by direct effort. So it's a way to access power, but it is different in that not only are you exercising your own capacity to do the right thing, which is willpower, your own capacity, but you are also opening yourself up to a power far beyond your own, that of the Holy Spirit. You are creating time and space to access God Himself at the deepest level of your being. Willpower isn't bad. That's what you get by discipline. You're waking up at 5 a.m. and going to the gym and getting your steps in by you taking your deep breaths and touching grass and all of the things that the gurus tell you to do to regulate your central nervous system. Those are disciplines. Those are willpower. But spiritual discipline gets you access to that level that we discussed earlier that far surpasses what the psychologists have figured out. He says willpower is central to transformation. When willpower works, it works great. It just doesn't normally get you very far especially early on in your journey with Jesus. But through spiritual practices, grounded in the life of Jesus, we gain access to a life power far beyond our own. He says, ironically, the practices are almost never commanded by Jesus. The one exception is prayer, which is commanded multiple times, but Jesus never commands you to wake up in the morning and have a quiet time, read your Bible, live in community, practice Sabbath, give your money to the poor, or any of the core practices from his way. He just does these practices and then tells you to follow me. He says he didn't command us to follow his practices. Neither did he give lectures on how to do them or offer Saturday morning workshops on developing your own rule of life. He simply set the example of a whole new way to carry life. Then he turned around and said, if you are tired of the way you've been doing it and you want rest for your souls, then come take up the easy yoke and copy the details of my life. Period. So that's where we end part two. And that's where we set the stage for part three, to where we learn and go deeper into what exactly those practices are. I pray that this episode has blessed you. I pray that this metaphor of the trellis really gave you practical insight on how you should go about your week. I'm putting this episode out on a Sunday, so whenever you listen, I pray that as you make plans for your schedule, for your day-to-day, or whatever you have going on, that you make sure that Jesus is central in those plans and that the structure you create exalts him and makes room for you and everything to revolve around him and not self, success, family, or anything else. Thank you guys so much for listening to another episode of the Blessed and Bossed Up podcast. I love you, and I'll see you in the next one.